My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Joseph Jaffe hosts a great podcast called Joseph Jaffe Is Not Famous. Joseph, tell listeners what to expect from the show where you're not famous.
Joseph Jaffe is still not famous. It's the daily show for business with a little Wayne's World thrown in for good measure. Since March 2020, I've welcomed over 650 guests, including Dan Pink, Tom Peters, Carol Baskin, Patrick Fabian, Robin DiAngelo, and even the very famous Jason Falls. It's a show about hope, positivity, and optimism, or as I like to say, it's not TV, it's HPO, where you'll get eulogy virtues to balance out my very famous guests' resume virtues.
And where can people subscribe?
Check out youtube.com/ Joseph Jaffe Is Not Famous. Find the show at marketingpodcast.net or search for Joseph Jaffe Is Not Famous wherever you get your podcasts. Enough name recognition for you?
Plenty. And now that you know the name, go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Gabrielle Dolan.
When two magnets come together, it's like this instant, like automatically bang connection. They just like click together. And it's very hard to pull away from that. It's like you've got this instant connection to it that's very hard to pull away from it. So when it comes to brand stories, it's like the stories you share that can create a connection.
Gabrielle is considered a global expert in business storytelling and real communication. She is a highly sought-after keynote speaker and best-selling author of 7 books. Her client list is extensive, including the likes of Visa, Amazon, EY, Uber, Accenture, Telstra, Australia Post, and the Obama Foundation. The professional highlight of her career so far is meeting Barack Obama while delivering storytelling training for the Obama Foundation. Gabrielle is the founder of Jargon Free Fridays, and her dedication to the industry was recognized when she was awarded Communicator of the Year in 2020 by the International Association of Business Communicators. Gabrielle, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks, Nick. It's great to be here speaking to you.
I am excited to be chatting with you. I feel like I want to jump right in and just ask, because I will admit my own ignorance that I don't know what jargon-free Fridays are, but I know as a communicator, I want to know what jargon-free Fridays are.
Look, jargon-free Fridays is a bit of a, for me, it was a bit of a thing I came up with about 5 years ago, and it's a fun way to raise awareness to what I think is a pretty serious communication in business is our overuse of jargon and acronyms. So what I did, I truly believe that if we spoke the way we did in business, in any other aspect of our life, we'd actually call it out for how ridiculous it sounds. So I sort of thought I'd have a bit of fun with this. So I got a couple of videos made where things like, if a marriage proposal was in corporate jargon, how ridiculous that would sound. So the idea is it's pretty hard to give up jargon, but what if we just tried for one day? What about on a Friday? We just were aware of all the jargon and acronym we used, and we just tried to, you know, monitor ourselves and monitor the people around us. So, yeah, like I said, a bit of a fun. Check out jargonfreefridays.com if you want a bit of a fun on Friday.
You know, it's interesting. I love how you even phrase that, because you used kind of cause language of raising awareness.
And then I'm sitting here thinking, but it really sort of is, because it's a problem. Whether it's personal communication, organizational brand communication, why is it hard for us to talk simple?
Because we're so conditioned. So we use jargon for a lot of reasons. We use it to fit in. So if you go into an organization and everyone's talking about pivoting, the word pivot, if I hear that, I almost have to hold back vomit every time I hear pivot. But if everyone is saying it, then it's so easy to say pivot, we need to pivot. Let's run it up the flagpole and all that type of stuff. So we repeat it. So to try to fit in, we repeat it. A lot of us use it just to sound like we know what we're talking about. And if you ask people, what does that mean? They really can't tell. And acronyms, so jargon's one thing, but acronyms are really dangerous, because depending on the company you work in, the industry you work in, they can mean completely different things. Like if I say to you SME, you might automatically, Nick, be thinking subject matter expert, but I might be referring to small to medium enterprise. So not only can it, like, what when you're using acronyms, what you're doing is you're putting all the onus on the other person to interpret, and hoping they interpret it to the acronym that you are talking about. So that can, it just really inhibits communication. But we think it's been really efficient when it's actually been really inefficient, and it's actually potentially disconnecting with people.
It's the absolute opposite of what we think it is. Early in my career, I started at an organization and I was presented with an acronym glossary, which was a little bit horrifying, because it was long, and I felt like I'm going to have to study up just to be able to talk here.
Yeah, that's what every company does. They go, oh, we've got a problem with too many acronyms, so let's make a database of all the acronyms. and no doubt they call it the ADB. But like, have you ever in mid sentence stopped to go, oh, hang on, let me check the acronym for that? And the reality is, even in your own company, you might have an acronym that has two different meanings. So it's just, I'm not saying get rid of all acronyms, because if everyone understands what the acronym is, then it's fine. But the vast majority, not everyone does. And it's just the overuse of it. It's just the excessive overuse of acronyms. Just because something has three words doesn't mean it needs to be reduced to an acronym.
You know, this is the mark of an engaging guest, because in our little pre-show chat, I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about this, and then we're going to talk about this, and then I'm right down the acronym rabbit hole. But since we're down here in the acronym rabbit hole, I have to ask, because it's usually the follow-up question I get when I'm making this very similar point teaching. And that's, okay, so when can we? So what's the answer to that? Is there a time when acronyms make sense?
Yeah, there is. And it's if everyone understands it and it's a very common one, then you would use it. It was like, for example, if you're talking about ATMs, you're not going to go automatic teller machine every time you go on. It sort of becomes a common thing. And there's even some words that start off as acronyms but then turn into words, like scuba was an acronym, laser was an acronym, but now they've become words. So yes, if everyone understands what it means, then go for it. But it's just when people don't, and it can be really dangerous when you're it's like industry. So it could be like, marketing terms, and you're using those marketing terms from people that aren't in marketing, and they don't get it. Or if you're using it to customers, you're using company terms and company acronyms, and using it to your customers, and they don't understand it, because it's not efficient communication. I remember I got an email from my financial planner once, and it had the acronym BPS in it, and I'm thinking, oh, what's BPS? So I sent her an email back and said, what's BPS? And she went, oh, it's basis points. And I was like, oh. So my first reaction was, well, how do you get a three-letter acronym out of two words? But anyway, my second reaction was, oh, of course it is. But now I'm feeling a little bit silly for not knowing, and I'm the customer. So And it wasn't efficient. That took 3 emails, which is not quicker than her writing basis points. So we think we're being efficient and effective, but we're not. It was the word acronym entered the English dictionary in the mid-40s when acronyms were used extensively during the World War. And they were used extensively because of two reasons. One is Morse code. So you've got to, I guess, be really efficient in how many characters you use. The other reason is they knew when the enemy intercepted the message, they wouldn't understand what it meant. So let's think about that for a moment. It's just like, unless we're using Morse code and we don't want people to understand what we're saying, why do we think using acronyms is efficient in business? It's just not. And I would almost go to say it's lazy. It's lazy communication.
So to be a more efficient and effective interviewer, I'm going to climb back up out of the acronym rabbit hole.
It's a good rabbit hole to be in, though, Nick. It's a good rabbit hole to go down.
I have a feeling it's one that many are curious about. I'm glad we were down there. But as I'm pulled back out of the acronym rabbit hole, it is by a magnetic force. That's what you call a segue here. What is a magnetic story? What makes a story magnetic?
Oh, that was a beautiful segue. I love your style. I love what you were doing there. So to me, a magnetic story, if you think of a magnet, it was like when two magnets come together, it's like this instant, like automatically bang connection. They just like click together. And it's very hard to pull away from that. So to me, a magnetic story is when it's almost what a story can do. If you hear a really powerful story, it's like you've got this instant connection to it that's very hard to pull away from it. So when it comes to brand stories, it's like the stories you share that can create a connection. I'll give you a really quick example, Nick. This is in the book, and it's probably one of my favorite stories in the book. Is when I was growing up, I was a bit of a tomboy, so I was never into dolls. I was always, riding my BMX bike and on my skateboard and playing football. And I never had a doll. And over the last couple of decades, when Barbie, and I never had a Barbie clearly, when Barbie started to get a bit of a bad rap that she was a bad role model for girls, it was unattainable body image and all that, I happily went along with that concept. And I've got two daughters who are now 18 and 21, but I never bought them a Barbie because of that. And when I was researching for the book, I discovered the backstory of Barbie. And Barbie was invented by Ruth Handler, which is the wife of one of the co-founders of Mattel that make Barbie. And what Ruth noticed, this was in the 50s, that she had two children. She had a son and a daughter. And the son was named Ken and the daughter was named Barbara. And yes, Ken and Barbie are named after her kids. But what she noticed is when they were playing with their respective dolls, Ken was encouraged to see himself as a firefighter, as an astronaut, as a superhero, and all Barbie's dolls saw her as a caregiver. And so she pitched the idea of this concept of Barbie, and eventually they agreed. And in 1959, Barbie debuted at the New York Toy Fair. And there's a quote from Ruth Handler that says, "My whole philosophy with Barbie was that through the doll, the little girl could imagine herself to be anything, that Barbie always represented that women have choices." And I remember reading that, and it completely changed my opinion of the brand Barbie. So not only completely changed my opinion, but will absolutely influence my potential buying habits. And so to me, that's the idea of a magnetic story. And the biggest feedback I get from my book, as an author, I'd love to hear feedback. Oh, how great the book was. Almost the immediate feedback I get from everyone is, "You have completely changed my opinion of Barbie."
Well, it's fascinating to think about. It's funny that you mentioned that example, because there's a series, I think, on the History Channel that I had on that was the Toys That Made Us, or the Toys That Built America, or something like that. And this very story is there. So, but it's also interesting, speaking of Barbie's story, is how they've evolved that story also, as social mores have done the same thing. I was fascinated to learn that Barbie made it to the moon as an astronaut, as a toy, before before all of us did here on Earth.
Yeah, I think there was astronaut Barbie in 1968 or something. So before, you know, we even landed on the moon, and there was, you know, executive Barbie. Like, these were all in the 60s. They were really progressive.
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Joseph Jaffe hosts a great podcast called Joseph Jaffe Is Not Famous. Joseph, tell listeners what to expect from the show where you're not famous.
Joseph Jaffe is still not famous. It's the daily show for business with a little Wayne's World thrown in for good measure. Since March 2020, I've welcomed over 650 guests, including Dan Pink, Tom Peters, Carol Baskin, Patrick Fabian, Robin DiAngelo, and even the very famous Jason Falls. It's a show about hope, positivity, and optimism, or as I like to say, it's not TV, it's HPO, where you'll get eulogy virtues to balance out my very famous guests' resume virtues.
And where can people subscribe?
Check out youtube.com/ Joseph Jaffe Is Not Famous. Find the show at marketingpodcast.net or search for Joseph Jaffe Is Not Famous wherever you get your podcasts. Enough name recognition for you?
Plenty. And now that you know the name, go subscribe.
Now, back to the show. So we hear stories like Barbie, and folks that mention that say, changed my mind on Barbie, and we recognize what it is and what draws us in, the magnetic force. If someone's thinking, okay, so how do I do that? How do you help?
Yeah, look, what I do is, when you're talking, whether you're talking about, you know, an organization or your products or your service or yourself, it's the first thing you got to do is, well, what do you want to be known for? So what are I talk about brand storytelling, like the definition of brand. There's a great quote, Jeff Bezos's definition of brand is what people say about you when you're not in the room. My tweak on that is it's the stories people share about you when you're not in the room, because I think ultimately we share stories. So the first step is to say, well, what is your brand? What do you want to be known for? And again, you could do this as an individual level or an organizational level. So what is it you want to be known for? And then it's about finding the stories that demonstrate that. And when I was researching for the book, Nick, I knew there would be an X number of stories that organizations need to think about sharing. I had no idea what that number would be, but it ended up being 5, where all the stories I heard sort of fell into 5 different categories. And to help them share stories is explore all those different types of stories. So one is the creation story, but the reason I called it creation, sometimes people call it the origin story or the founder story. It's normally about how the company started, which is good, but the reason I call it creation is because it could be how the product or service started. So that story I just shared was the creation story of Barbie. And even though their stories may evolve, they should never lose that creation story. And, you know, I would say what a missed opportunity that story isn't on every single packaging of a Barbie product.
So you set yourself up. No segue required from me. Walk us through, beyond the creation story, what are the 5 stories?
Yeah. Okay. So they all start with C because I do like a good, you know, palette. So creation is one. The other stories are culture stories. So these are how, again, what are your values of the company and how you're sharing stories that demonstrate that value. So it could be sharing stories about, you know, if one of your values is integrity, well, what are the stories you're doing to sharing that shows that you've got integrity. There's also in the culture stories, and this is a predominantly I do a lot of work with this, is going to organizations and help leaders share personal stories to communicate their values. So again, how are all your leaders sharing personal stories to communicate the values that is the culture? So that's your culture stories. There's customer stories. So what are the stories you're sharing about your customers, making the customers the hero? But it's going beyond just, you know, customer testimonials. It's really helping them, you know, share stories around your customers. And I've got a good example of that I might share after I've gone through the others. The other one is community stories. So again, what are you doing, the good things you're doing in the community that perhaps live and breathe your values? This is, again, going beyond just your corporate responsibility, but it could even be potentially sharing stories about your employees that are doing great things in the community that have nothing to do with what you're selling as a company, but it's just showing that you've got really great people working for you. And then the final type is challenge story. So how have you responded to challenges? I could have quite easily had a sixth category in there of COVID because there was a lot of stories that came out about, but I put some of them into challenge. So how has the company or how have you self responded to challenge? So there's creation, culture, customer, community, and challenge. And Nick, it's not as if I'm saying sometimes you can share a story and it can fall over different categories, but it's thinking of all the different types of stories you can share. So I said I'd give you an example of a customer story. I love this one from the book. I had I had so much fun writing this book because I got to speak to companies all around the globe and like hearing these great stories. But a company that really embraces storytelling is a restaurant in Florida. So it's one of the oldest, or I think it's the oldest restaurant in Florida. It's called the Columbia Restaurants, and I interviewed them and got all their ways their share stories. But this is a great example of a customer story. So in Valentine's Day last year, they put something on their social medias. It was on Facebook of customers. There's a couple that celebrate their wedding anniversary at the Columbia restaurant every year for the last 72 years. And the story goes that on their wedding anniversary, their first wedding anniversary, they came to the Columbia restaurant and had dinner. The second year they came back and coincidentally got seated at the same table. For the next 70 years, Columbia restaurant have held that table for them on their wedding anniversary, and they've come back. And, you know, they share the story to say, you know, celebrating love and to all the lovebirds. But you read that story and it's like the customer's the hero. You go, isn't that amazing? But by default, you're going, that's a really cool thing that company's doing, that they're securing the table, but these couple are coming back. So it must be a pretty special restaurant. So I just love that example of a great customer story.
I love that story too, and it really heightens when you first brought up the customer story. You noted more than a testimonial, and you know this is bridging that gap that your words, what your work straddles of personal communication, organizational communication, the words that we choose have impact, because testimonial is what we gravitate towards, and I don't want to minimize those. They're incredibly important, but sometimes you have to work a little bit harder to find the story beyond just a general endorsement. I think a story feels like something much bigger.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, sometimes sometimes all you need is a testimonial and you'll have those. But you have to sometimes dig deeper with customers to find the story. And it's like normally, you know, the real benefits they've got or the real value and again, making them sort of the hero in the story.
So speaking of the importance of story, it is hard, as I'm sure you know and are probably called upon to give at events. It's hard not to go to one and to find a talk on the power of story, to find articles, books about story. People are finally waking up to this idea of story, and they're jumping in, wanting to get to work. But what are some of the common mistakes we're making when putting story into practice as an organization?
Yeah, and like you said, finally, we're realizing the power of story.
It took a little while.
It took a while. I literally left my corporate job 17 years ago teaching business people how to share stories. And 17 years ago, it was pretty lonely out there. It was very lonely out there. Now it seems like everyone's talking about stories. So, yeah, look, let me talk about some of the common mistakes I see. So, first of all, as I see companies make, one of the most common mistakes, especially when it comes to brand storytelling, is they think it's one story. So the amount of times companies say to me, can you help us develop our brand story? And I go, well, it's just not one story. Like, there is not one story that demonstrates your brand. So that's one of the common mistakes. It's like we need lots and lots and lots and lots of stories. Often when we're looking at one, when they look at one story, it ends up being a timeline. So a lot of people go, this is our story, and I look at it and it's a timeline. So, you know, it's called a timeline for a reason. It's not a story. So that's some of the biggest mistakes I see companies make. I also, you know, and I know a lot of your listeners are in branding and marketing, a lot of the mistakes I see companies make is leaving it to branding and marketing. Like, oh, that's the responsibility of branding and marketing, where I think branding and marketing have a really good influencing role in getting stories in, but when it's just left to a department, it's, you know, it's like when we leave all the people issues to HR. Well, that's got failure written all over it. So if we leave storytelling and marketing just to the marketing department, where it's every leader, like the leaders have an opportunity to be sharing stories internally. Frontline facing staff have an opportunity to be sharing stories to our customers. So we need to teach them how to tell stories better. So there's actually a skill involved, because sharing stories with our friends over dinner and sharing stories in a work situation, there's a very, very big difference. And it is hard. If it was easy, we'd all be doing it and we'd be doing it well. So it's actually teaching people how they can share stories more effectively. But when it comes to brand storytelling, it's also showing our people, and especially, you know, our customer-facing roles, well, not especially, but including them, how they can generate stories. So if we want to be known as exceptional customer service, well, what are we doing to empower our people to deliver on exceptional customer service? So because they will then generate stories. So they will do something where then our customers are sharing those stories.
And as you noted, the stories that you tell to friends being different from the stories that you tell at work, I want to be sure to highlight other components of your work, specifically your book Stories for Work, which again, like I mentioned, is right here on my bookshelf, a great book. And you mentioned leaders. And I said in my now defunct pre-show plan for the interview that we'd get to personal communication, and of course we went down the acronym rabbit hole. But I do want to make sure I ask, talk about the importance of, you mentioned leaders and leading with story.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I say leaders, it's anyone in a position to lead. It's not a title as such. But if you're trying to get people to embrace a change, for example, or if you're trying to get people really connected to the values or the strategy or the purpose of a company, it's up to, again, this isn't just the CEO or the executive leadership team sharing stories. It's up to every person that is managing people and leading teams for them to share their personal stories. And ultimately, I think the key to success when it comes to culture and getting people connected to strategy and values is it's all the leaders in the company sharing personal stories of what that means to them. So if one of our values is integrity, every leader should have a personal story to communicate what integrity means to them. Nick, a lot of the work I do is that with organizations, and I will, you know, I'll say to someone, so, okay, so Nick, one of your values is integrity. What does that mean to you? And people will go, well, it means telling the truth. I go, yeah, what else? It means doing what you say you're going to do. What else? And then literally after 20 seconds, they'll go, oh, gee, you've put me on the spot here. I haven't really thought about it this much before. And that's the reality that we, you know, we roll out values and we spend a lot of time wordsmithing the values and what they should be. We spend very little time taking our leaders through and taking our people through a process of what does it mean to them personally, so they create a personal connection, and then teaching them how they can communicate that through a personal story.
That is a great point and a great reminder prefaced with all of that, because a lot of times we hear the word leader and we have a very narrow vision of that. So I love your point about anyone in a position to lead. Gabrielle, as we start to wrap up here, it is time for me to ask you, outside of Barbie, for a brand that has made you smile recently.
I'm going to have to say Qantas. So Qantas for the last couple of months have been, you know, because we're now been able to get in the air and fly again, the ad they created for, you know, doing that was really, really emotional. It really tapped into emotion. It really tapped into why people want to travel. And I've recently been on a Qantas flight as last week, and you can tell every single person on the flight is excited to be there, but their staff are so excited and so energized that the ad made me smile, but the experience of the brand made me smile as well.
I love that. That is a great story and several smiles baked in there. Gabrielle, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, look, the website's the best thing, so GabrielleDolan.com. If you're sort of wondering, well, how do I get sort of started on storytelling, I have a 7-day storytelling starter kit, so it's free, and it sort of is what it says. It's a way to get you started. So what happens if you subscribe to that, you'll get an email from me once a day for 7 days, and it will just help you start thinking about where the stories you can share, where you can share them, and just sort of start you on your way. There's also something around brand storytelling, a little bit of a quiz you could do to see how well your company's going around the whole brand storytelling concept. But GabrielleDolan.com is the place to go.
Awesome. And we'll link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Gabrielle, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks, Nick. It's been a pleasure.
And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Joseph Jaffe hosts a great podcast called Joseph Jaffe Is Not Famous. Joseph, tell listeners what to expect from the show where you're not famous.
Joseph Jaffe is still not famous. It's the daily show for business with a little Wayne's World thrown in for good measure. Since March 2020, I've welcomed over 650 guests, including Dan Pink, Tom Peters, Carol Baskin, Patrick Fabian, Robin DiAngelo, and even the very famous Jason Falls. It's a show about hope, positivity, and optimism, or as I like to say, it's not TV, it's HPO, where you'll get eulogy virtues to balance out my very famous guests' resume virtues.
And where can people subscribe?
Check out youtube.com/ Joseph Jaffe is not famous. Find the show at marketingpodcast.net or search for Joseph Jaffe is not famous wherever you get your podcasts. Enough name recognition for you?
Plenty. And now that you know the name, go subscribe.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.